Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from GLT listeners. Join the community of news consumers who listen to Sound Ideas and are also willing to support it financially. Learn more about listener-supported radio and GLT at WGLT.org.
Up next is a special edition of Sound Ideas and Illinois Issues Forum here on 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org. You can personalize the NPR One app. Learn more at WGLT.org/NPR1. With a few clicks, teach it what you like and what you don't. And if you hear GLT or NPR news you like but want to hear later, you can save it. Get NPR and GLT news and podcasts all in one place. And download and try the free NPR One app. Learn more at WGLT.org/NPR1.
Welcome to our NPR Illinois Forum series, Election 2018, Seeking Solutions, the series produced by NPR Illinois and supported by AARP. I'm Sean Crawford, NPR Illinois News Director, host of a show and a podcast called State Week, and also one called Statewide. Tonight's program is a partnership with Illinois Public Media, and we are in Urbana at the I Hotel and Conference Center. We're glad you could come out tonight. We also welcome those listening on the air and through social media. We are traveling across Illinois this year. We've been doing this all pretty much since the spring, hearing how voters like yourselves feel about various issues that are facing the state. And tonight we're focused on not just the state's fiscal health, there's plenty to talk about there, but some other issues as well, including how to grow the economy, the role that innovation can play in doing that. Also, what you may see as some of the problems in the state and maybe some solutions. So we'd like to hear from you tonight. We've asked you to submit questions or comments, and if we call on you, we'd like for you to step to the microphone. It's right back there. We have a great panel to help guide this discussion tonight. I'm going to let them introduce themselves. We'll start right here next to me.
Hi, I'm Laura Frericks. I'm the director of the University of Illinois Research Park and Incubator, and also have a role as leading economic development at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign.
My name is Brian Gaines. I'm a professor at the University of Illinois with appointments in the Department of Political Science and at the Institute of Government and Public Affairs. And I primarily study public opinion, but also
elections and, to a lesser extent, I suppose, economics. So I was wary of the description that we'd be answering the questions about providing fiscal solutions. So I'll do our best to answer questions, but the solutions to Illinois' fiscal problems are tricky. So I'm not expecting to rattle them off and be done in 5 minutes.
Okay. So you may take a while to answer your questions tonight, so give them some time. Let's start with an overview of the economy. And I'm going to ask each of you to just give at least, if we can't keep this a more of a brief answer, but what do you see as the state of Illinois' economy? I just saw today where unemployment for the state of Illinois was, I believe, down to 4.1%. That is ties the lowest mark on record. That's one indicator of economic health, so that seems to be pretty good. But let me get a better view from each of you, both what you see. Brian, let me start with you on this one.
Yeah, so unemployment nationwide is very low, and Illinois is tracking. We're a little bit higher than the national average, maybe a little bit higher than some of the surrounding states, but on the whole, the trend has been down. It's essentially unemployment rate has been falling pretty much steadily since 2010 or so. The unemployment rate isn't the whole story. Another related but not identical figure is employment figures. Are there more jobs? Because unemployment is computed according to people seeking work, and often if the labor force is shrinking, people are giving up on finding jobs. The unemployment rate can be somewhat misleading. But the employment numbers are not as rosy, but also pretty good. And I think generally this is, you know, putting on my political scientist hat again for a moment, one of the puzzles at the moment is the sense that the objective economic indicators are improving, but people are unhappy. And so there are a variety of answers why that might be. Some people would say it's because of political inequality and that's not reflected in unemployment levels. Or the different answer, though, I think that, you know, back to the question, what's the state of Illinois, would be that the sort of short-term economic trends are hiding what's the big, I don't know if it's an elephant or a blue whale or something larger than a blue whale in the room, which is the fiscal situation. Illinois has a huge fiscal deficit. Basically, we have much too big a debt, and it's continuing to grow. And so even if you could say the unemployment numbers look good, the real problem for Illinois is that if not the dead last in the nation, certainly in the bottom five in our fiscal health.
Laura?
So I'll try to speak more tonight about innovation and economic development related to the technology industry. The state of Illinois is one of the most diverse economies in the country, and that's a blessing in some ways that we touch so many different industries and have the opportunity to be disruptive and innovative amongst them. But it's also a challenge in branding our state for our company attraction of what are we particularly strong at compared to other states and other large centers of employment in the U.S. So the state of Illinois has been challenged about population declining in some areas of the state fairly broadly. In places like Champaign-Urbana, we're very proud that we're the fastest growing city in the state of Illinois, and we believe that's attributed to the tech economy. Now, there's certain areas that I think that are important to address for the state that we can harness as well. There's a long history of logistics, and so supply chain, which impacts a number of industries, whether that's food or manufacturing or retailers, but we also have a strength in financial services and insurance. Those may not be quite as recognized of how many major corporations and the employment sectors that are doing very innovative types of technology projects throughout the state, but that's certainly something that we can look to. And of course, one of the largest leaders in the agriculture economy in the U.S., and really I think an opportunity that we certainly see here amongst other places in the state to impact agriculture with precision agriculture and new technology solutions that help to feed our population, not only in the U.S., but globally through more productivity and more efficiencies through technology.
Laura, let me stay on this subject of innovation. As far as going around the state, I hear from a lot of people, and I think they feel as though the state's not going in the right direction, maybe due to some of the things that Brian was just talking about with state government, with state finances. But are there misconceptions with just how well Illinois is doing when it comes to trying to grow not just the economy, but to grow, to be innovative and try to really set the bar for, you know, for the future?
A couple of things that I think are important. One is certainly around tech talent. So every time we have tech discussions, there's a presumption of that we're somehow deficient in tech talent, and it's quite the opposite. The number one state in the U.S. for production or essentially graduates of computer science programs, which is the most in-demand new tech types of graduates, is California. And maybe that doesn't surprise anybody, but it might surprise you that the number two state is Illinois. So we actually have a wealth of talent in some of the areas that are highest in demand. We're increasing enrollment not only here at the University of Illinois, places like Northwestern and University of Chicago and University of Illinois Springfield and UIC also making strides in those areas that make us really should be a place where the tech companies want to go because of the scarcity of tech talent across the U.S., and that we have, in essence, sort of a surplus compared to the amount of jobs that are on the marketplace and being advertised at the current moment. So I do think in some cases you have to lead with what you have, and if the public discourse is always complaining about the lack of tech talent, maybe recognizing something that we really could leverage, which is a strength of tech talent and STEM graduates in the state of Illinois that is very rich in higher education. Also, we have made strides in other areas. So venture capital continues to increase in the state, attracting more and more investors. And one of the reasons is we have some of the highest rates of return for venture capitalists in the U.S. So albeit there may be higher rounds of funding in Silicon Valley or in New York, the returns to those investors are actually quite high in the Midwest and in Chicago area in particular. So being able to attract those investors that are seeking not only to have the opportunity to find the potential unicorns, but to be able to return value to their investors and limited partners in a way that really allows them to continue to do the most that they can with the amount of money that they have. That's one of the reasons here in Champaign-Urbana, as we sit here tonight, that we have three times more the venture capital per capita than the U.S. average for early stage. And the University of Illinois is one of the top 10 universities in the U.S. for venture capital-backed entrepreneurs. And so I think there's really some growth spots there. We need to use our language a little bit differently as well of what's the value proposition and how do we continue to be a leader in this in the Midwest.
So, Brian, that all sounds pretty good. Why aren't voters more excited about the direction that Illinois is headed?
Well, I think maybe I'll go back to the sort of how I'm going to be ER for a while. And when I said Illinois is in dire fiscal shape, if you just spend an hour Googling to look at rankings of the states on a whole variety of measures, but to pension liabilities, unfunded pension liabilities, credit rating, how prepared is the state? There's a new report from one of the credit rating agencies on how prepared the states are for the next big recession. Illinois is often last, and if it's not last, it's in the bottom 10. To take credit rating, it's very clear that we've been spending too much money for too long, basically for more than 20 years, spending more than we have. There's a balanced budget requirement. It isn't meaningful, and we've seen a great creativity and innovation in the accounting gimmicks used by government. But we're in a huge hole. And so we have the worst credit rating of all the states. On the other hand, it could be worse. I think there is a reflection that this is a vibrant economy. It's not impossible to solve fiscal problems, that there are ways to get more revenue, cut spending, and make Illinois healthy again. Or we would be have even worse ratings and in some respect seeing more people fleeing. So I don't disagree with the characterization that there are lots of strengths, that this is not an economy that relies on one industry, and that industry is dying and there's no solution in sight. But it is true that bad governance has put us in a very bad spot, and it's a hard spot to get out. And then the cliche is, first thing you do when you're in deep hole, stop digging. And we haven't yet stopped digging.
So usually when you go into an election year, I always think the key indicator of whether somebody's going to be reelected is the economy. The economy in Illinois seems to be going along at an okay pace. We just heard some of the positives. And yet Governor Bruce Rauner's approval ratings, for example, not very good right now. In fact, he seems to be trailing in almost all polling, and in some cases by double digits, to the Democratic candidate, J.B. Pritzker. So somewhere there's a disconnect there, or people just not that, the economy is just not the driver that I thought it was.
The economy is not the only driver. I think you could, I suggested, I didn't quite finish the sentiment, maybe, that nationally there's something of a puzzle in the same way, because the economic statistics look good, but people are forecasting this will be a very large midterm loss, a large loss for the Republicans. There's a tendency to give the president credit or blame for the economy, and so you might think that if the economic performance is unusually good, that it should be not such a bad year for Republicans. We'll see. It's a couple of weeks to go yet, but it seems pretty likely that they'll lose control of the U.S. House of Representatives. So now to go to Illinois again, the same question is, why isn't a good economic performance enough to keep the incumbent in power? Well, first of all, attributing blame and credit is harder when you've got divided government. So nationally right now, you could say Republicans are in charge of everything. If things go well, they get the credit or the blame. But that's a governor is not an emperor. So this governor's campaign message is he's doing his best, but he has to deal with a legislature that won't cooperate. And his opponent's message is he's failed. And I'm not here tonight to broadcast one of those messages and say one of them is right, the other's not. But I think that to the extent that there is some signs of good economic performance, it's not a trivial thing to say who gets the credit. And I've been emphasizing the bad economic situation, so who gets the blame? I think there's plenty of blame to go around, but what you'll hear on the campaign trail is essentially two partisan stories about why the other party is wholly to blame and one party isn't.
So Laura, let me just ask you, because when the governor was first elected, Bruce Rauner, of course it was, we've got to do better in the state of Illinois. Mm-hmm. Now he's running, and most of his 4 years have been, we have to make Illinois better for business, that Illinois is not very friendly to business. And I've heard that from a lot of small business people, especially, who say the state, it's too many regulations, too costly to operate a business here. From what you see, do you think Illinois is good for business?
Again, I'm going to speak tonight more of a technology and innovation economy, and that has different needs than perhaps some of the other sectors as well. So a lot of our experience is that those tech industry sector are not as much reliant upon some of the other business climate issues, workers' compensation, sure, or other traditional manufacturing type concerns about tax apportionment and other topics that might come along with that. But they are very worried about talent, so that's something that I think we can embrace. I think it's also important to look at some of the things that are necessary. So how does the state make an influence on educational attainment in areas that are needed, that support of both K-12 school systems that are vibrant, that attract households, that make industry want to move their companies? And there's been challenges certainly with CPS schools and other areas where they're struggling to deal with some of the funding requirements and test scores and other things that might reflect not necessarily an emphasis on improving scores, and that might be about how property taxes are managed in Illinois. And I'm kind of going around some different topics, but there's also a sense of in some cases, haves and have-nots, to follow up on sort of your answer. So yes, I'd said that Champaign was growing in population, but I'd also mentioned that we're losing population in many other areas. And how do we present a viewpoint that is more optimistic for other places in the state about how we're going to change Peoria, or how we're going to change the Quad Cities or Bloomington, with a forward-thinking innovation economy as well? And so some of that is trying to figure out how we serve the entire state and give them real positive direction. That's not just what we are going to do in Chicago, but how are we going to serve an economy that needs to be helped by the different economies and the different cities across the state. Some of those other peer university towns really were strained by the 2 years of lack of funding for higher education that made us not only have enrollment fall, but also the challenges in bringing in research funding to universities that couldn't make their best and brightest plays for innovation when they're worried about paying their bills and being able to retain their faculty. We also had no capital bill for nearly 10 years. So investments in physical infrastructure in terms of our road assets, our bridges, or other things usually are drivers of construction and building trades jobs that can have an influence in the state and impact other portions of the economy, but also can invest and be a physical reflection of companies coming in and seeing shiny new. And that's important and often something that the state plays a role in making possible.
I want to come back to some things you talked about there, but Brian, I will ask you that same question. Is Illinois good for business?
It could certainly be better. I think it's still true that we have some advantages. Some of them are sort of long-time structural advantages, like geographic location. It's a good geographic location in the middle of the continent. We do have this, a problem that's not uncommon amongst the states of decaying infrastructure, but we also have some historic transportation advantages. I think the governor, if he can, I'll make this a sort of conditional answer. If the governor can succeed in getting reelected, part of it's going to be he has to persuade voters that he's been trying hard to improve the business climate and he's being resisted. That the problem isn't him. That the problem is that he has good ideas that can't get implemented. It's still hard to persuade people that if you haven't got the ideas that would actually improve the business climate passed in your first term, you'll get them in the second term. But if the comparison is my opponent isn't going to try to implement these ideas, the business climate's only going to get worse, then it leaves voters at least thinking maybe, you know, if I buy the case, then is I can be pessimistic but still think that's the better choice. I don't have a horse in this race, and this is I'm not running for office myself, and I don't think it's a simple case of one of the candidates for governor is dead right and the other is dead wrong. But I think that if you're worried about whether the state is friendly enough for business, then it's not hard to find ways in which surrounding states are in some respects better places to set up. But I think Illinois still has a lot of fundamental advantages.
And on incentives, I mean, there wasn't necessarily broad support from the governor's office either. So EDGE tax credits, R&D tax credits, and some of the other drivers on the innovation economy of seeing how do we implement those programs such that we're giving business, albeit if not necessarily lower tax rates, using tax incentives in smart ways that drive them and nudge them in a direction that they might add jobs or add to the types of jobs that are high paying.
Let me call on one of the questions from the crowd here. We have I hope I got this name right, Bob Lascherite. I don't know if that's correct or not. If Bob's around, Bob, could you step into the mic? Have you asked your question? And again, we do have the cards if somebody'd like to fill any of those out. Just raise your hand. We'll bring one to you if you didn't get one. I'd like to hear from you tonight as well and some things that are on your mind. Bob, whenever you get there, go ahead.
Hi there. Well, my question is, seems like, you know, AARP, so most of us are retired, I assume. Looking around, I see some younger people too, but everybody's got to sacrifice to bring us out of this fiscal problem. I guess I'm thinking of retired people. Are we willing to have our pension income and our Social Security taxed here in Illinois? I think... I read a couple facts in as I was writing this question. Illinois is only one of three states that does not have pension income taxed. I think if we did have that taxed, it would be worth, this is something I read, about $2 billion to the state. I don't know how long that would take to correct some of our problems anyway. But I guess that's my question.
Thank you, Bob. Appreciate that. And yes, for those who are too young to realize, Illinois does not tax the retirement income. Brian, I'll throw this one to you. This comes up a lot. A lot of people talk about this as maybe an area that the state could tap into for some revenue. I've heard other people say, hey, you're losing population. The one thing you don't want to do is drive more people to leave the state by adding a tax that isn't there already. Your thoughts on it?
Yeah. So the second half of that, I have a long-winded answer. I shouldn't be extremely long-winded. I'm not running for office, so I can say I'm perfectly happy to endorse the taxation of retirement income, and luckily I'm not asking any of you to vote for me. It has proven a politically, touchy isn't strong enough an adjective, a politically dangerous position, and so it's not the case that we have one candidate for governor who's endorsed it and the other who hasn't. At the moment, there's nobody's pushing strongly for taxation of retirement income. But given the need for revenue, I think that it is a sensible policy. It can still be done in such a way that it's not, essentially easily defended principle of taxation would be you would want to tax according to ability to pay, so you'd worry about retirement, any sort of taxation for retirement plan that doesn't take into account the difference between people who are earning wages and people who are spending down savings. But it doesn't make sense just to favor a category of people, the older people, because they vote more, which is the very crude political logic of it. One of the reasons that it's untouchable is because politicians know that turnout rises dramatically with age, and they're very wary of inflicting costs on older voters. But going back to the beginning of the question, everybody does have to sacrifice. We're not in a situation where it's easy to say that Illinois can fix its problems with a couple of quick innovations, turn up in the economy, and it'll all be solved. So I think this isn't the only sacrifice by any stretch, but it's one of the sacrifices that would help solve problems.
You won't be running for office anytime soon, it doesn't sound like, right?
I hope the tapes of this program are destroyed if it comes to it, but I have no plans at all to run for office.
We did get a question off Twitter, so I'm going to just read this one. And Laura, I'm going to have you answer this, and Brian, you can certainly weigh in. How can the state encourage college graduates to stay in Illinois? Because we've been seeing an outflow of college students, I guess you could be saying college grads being those who graduate from Illinois colleges and leave the state, or those who just go to school in other states. Are there some specific needs not being met? They're just trying to figure out how can the state do a better job there.
So a couple of things. The first and perhaps obvious is that people stay because they have good jobs that they want to take and that pay well. And so growing jobs in the state that are attractive amongst employers that are attractive is essential. But the second, I'm going to give it more of a creative answer because I think it's intriguing in other states that they've done loan forgiveness programs. And that is tied to, so say you have debt with the state on a MAP grant or something along those lines, that you have your tuition, you've paid into that, and then if you choose to work in the state of Illinois in maybe targeted areas where there's employment need, where there's unmet jobs not being filled, and that's in areas that might be STEM related, it might be STEM teachers, for example, it might be other healthcare fields that are lacking enough talent to fill jobs, so we're not getting tax income from them, that we make an investment in that talent and say if you take employment and you stay in the state, that we will gradually forgive your higher education debt, and affordability is a big issue. So I think there's a good tie there, and there's some creative solutions that have been done in other states like New Hampshire that we should look at. They're not that expensive, actually, if you look at the numbers of what's been put behind them, but I think it makes a big statement that the state would do something that's truly beneficial and less just about the marketing to the students and assuming that they might act in their financial disinterest by taking a job that might pay less in Illinois than it does in the West Coast. There's a lot of talk back and forth of why students choose the West Coast, and you could make a case that it's a higher cost of living, but my experience is students generally look at the actual salary as the bigger driver, and in many cases the Midwest is still not keeping up pace to be competitive on those salaries. But if we can address the debt, I think that's another angle to consider.
I know we have some young people here. I don't know if you could just raise your hands about college student loan debt, for example. How big of an issue is it for you? If it is an issue, raise your hands. I know we've got some people who've been out of college a while even, and they're still running into that problem. Brian, your thoughts on that. What could the state do better when it comes to keeping the best and brightest graduating from college or going to college in this state?
Yeah, I'm guardedly positive about the idea of addressing student debt. It's clearly a big problem in universities. This goes slightly against my personal interest as a university professor, but we've been raising tuition faster than the rate of inflation. So unless the gains from going to college are increasing proportionally, then you could say that we're shortchanging the students.
And not just tuition, but fees.
Fees
are really where it seems to hit you.
Tuition
as well.
Is increasingly a shorthand for tuition and fees, and so mm-hmm. that
sure.
some of the costs are slightly disguised, not enormously disguised. The one thing I'd say politically, I'd be slightly worried about the regressive aspect of this, that it's still true that going to university is a sensible investment and it pays off, and that if you put in benefits that are targeted expressly at people who go to university, then people who don't ever attend university aren't eligible for them. It might make it more attractive, but I worry a little bit that policies that direct, not that student debt isn't a serious problem, but it's still true in the end that people who don't attend college at all have, on average, worse life chances. So you don't want to be working exclusively on the college grads and in order to keep them from going off to California where they'll discover that huge salary is meaningless given the incredible cost of housing.
I think there have been reports of colleges, universities in other states, not even just neighboring states, but I believe University of Alabama was one of those that was offering pretty good deals to Illinois students to go there instead of an in-state school and basically making it almost cheaper for them to do that. And Illinois has to compete somehow.
And the recent legislation that was passed to provide some merit-based scholarships should make some improvements in that. Of course, to your point, are we rewarding the students that are in the best place to succeed and have a bright financial future anyway? However, for the universities, not only ours but others, to be competitive and not lose a chance to have especially diverse and strong candidates accept enrollment here at the University of Illinois, that means that we put a better financial package together. I'm also really proud of the University of Illinois for just announcing its new program to allow 4 years of free tuition for households with $61,000 annual income or less. I think that's a huge opportunity that is a differentiator for the state of Illinois, and that really gets to the issues of not just addressing the fortunate, but giving a leg up and an opportunity for students that might not otherwise get the chance to go to a University of Illinois or other places.
That's Laura Frericks, director of the University of Illinois Research Park and works on the U of I Urbana-Champaign economic development issues. Brian Gaines is a University of Illinois professor, and he's with the Department of Political Science, also works with the Institute of Government and Public Affairs here at the UIUC. So that's our panel for tonight. We still want to hear from you this evening. It's another one of our Election 2018 Seeking Solutions forums. Otis Williams, is Otis around? Otis, do you mind stepping back to the microphone? We can have you ask your question, and I know he had one here as well. And this is an issue he's going to talk about, which has come up, especially when we were doing these forums in the Chicago area. A lot of focus is on trying to attract a major company to come to that region. And go ahead, Otis, you can ask the question.
Well, my question, I guess, is directed more at Laura, since she is the technology person, and that's an area of interest for me. Jobs are very important, and I sort of keep up with what's going on in technology, and I know that Amazon right now is competing. Well, they have selected 20 sites recently for their new HQ2, their new headquarters 2. And Chicago is still included in that group of 20, one of the few, I think, northern sites on the list, actually. What, in your mind, might be the advantages from a technology perspective for the state of Illinois, generally, I guess, the Chicago and Collar County areas, that would help us perhaps be in a good running for that? And how does the University of Illinois, for example, as a university producing a lot of technology persons, especially in the College of Engineering, might be an area that would help us to improve our ability maybe to land that particular site?
Well, I wish I had a crystal ball and could tell you where it's going to go, but I don't think anybody knows, in the public sector at least, that I've heard any real intelligence further on that. World Business Chicago did a fantastic job of putting a bid together. I think if you haven't seen the video, you should take a look at it, of how they presented the city and a lot of advantages that they showcased in that. Now, how the company is going to make a decision, I think, certainly will include a talent component. As I'd already said, I think what's underappreciated in some cases is that not only the University of Illinois is a bright contributor to tech talent, but the entire state has such rich resources in engineering and computer science that should be a major attraction, versus some other cities that have been growing fast, Nashville and other places, where higher education degrees aren't growing at the same rate that they are here. When I think about the city of Chicago, there's a couple of things. One that really resonates, I think, of thinking about a major logistics company that is transforming the way we buy things. The history of Chicago with the freight rail going through it meant that the merchandisers, the Merchandise Mart and the Montgomery Wards and the Sears of their day, provided a new way to reach consumers. It was through ordering through a catalog and delivery to your home in a way that meant you didn't have to live in a big city. You could get goods anywhere. And Chicago was at the forefront of that. They changed the way consumers received their goods. And we were the hub of major retailers and commerce as a result of that, and still have, I think it's 40% of all goods travel through the city of Chicago in some way. So I think there's a legacy that makes sense for us as a place that does things differently, that can take goods to the marketplace all throughout the U.S., that I think has a certain historical resonancy that makes sense on this project, and real estate and opportunities to make it happen that include public transportation in ways that some of those other cities like Austin and Nashville are cool, but they don't have. They were built very fast growth recently, and they didn't include transit that was part of that proposal of what they were seeking, that Chicago has a long-standing history of service of Metra and CTA and Amtrak that allow our residents to be able to get to and from work, whether they choose to live in the suburbs or if they choose to live in the city, in ways that some of our peer cities don't have as an advantage. And I also think that there's an opportunity because there isn't a big dominant tech employer in Chicago. So it used to be, when you graduated from the University of Illinois, and I'll apologize a little bit to Motorola, that Motorola was the de facto. I graduated here in 1999, and if you were an engineering student and you were going to stay in the Chicago area, that was the major employer. And they took a lot of students from here, and they employed thousands of them. And Motorola has changed, as we all know. And so it isn't quite the behemoth in the Chicagoland area, although, albeit many former Motorola people now are still highly influential in the success of other companies. But what replaced that? So you've got Caterpillar. Caterpillar's got some jobs in Chicago now, but is primarily Peoria. They're one of the biggest recruiters. Allstate's one of the biggest recruiters of tech talent. But there isn't that marquee tech name that I think is a real magnet that can employ at scale. We have a lot of smaller tech companies that are doing a great job recruiting and building up a tech economy in Chicago. But I think having a big dominant company like Amazon, they really have a great opportunity. And if they don't do it, I think other places, Google has already made clear, Facebook has made clear, they're going to add more jobs in Chicago. So I think it's Amazon's get if they came into Chicago, that they could make a real change for their business in a place that has the talent to serve their needs and the infrastructures to support that growth.
We hear a lot about comparisons to Silicon Valley all the time. And, you know, Illinois has the potential to be the Midwest Silicon Valley. But will it take something like that? Is it going to take some high-profile move like an Amazon to really make that happen? Or can it happen through just the incremental growth of a Google or a Facebook or others?
I think you always hope you have your homegrown success. So as much as I think many of us are excited about the potential for something like an Amazon H2 coming to Chicago, you also hope that there's that takeoff of some Chicago tech startup that becomes a nationally known best opportunity. And there are some that are doing a really great job. So I don't want to say that we don't have wonderful employers in Chicago and in Champaign, for that matter, that have done extraordinary jobs of building hundreds of jobs. And we have certain sectors that I think are really, you know, you're operating at the top of class. I've mentioned the financial sector in Chicago. Some of the best tech jobs in Chicago are technology-driven jobs in trading and for banks and insurance. And that message hasn't really gotten out, that they pay incredibly well and they have incredibly difficult challenges in cybersecurity and data sciences and computer engineering that hopefully attract students in a way that they may not have realized that those sectors are some of the best to apply their skills. So yeah, I think it'd be great to attract one of those big companies. A lot of the jobs that we do have in Chicago amongst those household names are in the marketing and sales space, and so that's good, but it doesn't necessarily bring along that engineering base that wants to tackle the hardest things they can. And if the place to do that is still in Silicon Valley, that's going to continue to be a magnet to Silicon Valley or Seattle or other places that have the most difficult problems to solve.
Richard Schnorr, if he's in the audience. Richard, like to hear from you. He's right by the microphone. Go ahead.
My question is whether Illinois will ever get off of this financial position unless our legislatures are really working for the better of all of people in Illinois, rather than having their focus on A, staying power, and B, helping friends. There continue to be things laden and laden and laden laws that support certain groups. Don't get me wrong, there's right times to have changes that benefit some people, but they are often only done because certain people want something and they vote. I don't know how we can make that change. When I travel and have talked to people throughout the country, when they get to talking about politics, they say, oh yeah, you've got the governors who went to jail. I say, you know what, that's true, it's a real problem. But the biggest thing is corrupt of morality, of not using your morals to decide what you're going to do. There are, in current law, they're not taking the time to see. There are things, in fact, somebody at a forum some years ago, the Institute of Public and Government Issues, said that our economic development perks for companies or whatever was developed 20, 30 years ago. They sit there and actually do more damage than they actually help. And so my question is, can we ever solve this problem if they are not looking and we don't push them to do the best for people of Illinois, all of them? Thank you.
Brian, I'm going to let you answer that. I know that, you know, what Richard was saying, that is a very common feeling among voters, many voters, both parties, who feel as though that the people who are elected are not really working for the public's good, but more to help them and help those who have some influence. But your thoughts on that, what needs to happen to turn that around?
Well, I don't want to dodge the question entirely. I think I agree that in some respects, the question, can you change the culture of the place? If there's a sort of culture of self-interest and corruption, can you change that? And I think the cynical answer would be you can't, or that you can't short of imposing major institutional changes. So I think, you know, some of the justification for term limits, which are enormously popular but can't be passed, can't be passed because this isn't a state where you can make constitutional changes by citizens' initiative, except with enormous difficulty. In California and Oregon and other states, direct democracy is much easier. So most of the states that have term limits on state legislators are states where it came up from the bottom, the public essentially demanded it. The legislature didn't impose it on itself. Now, political scientists would disagree about whether term limits would solve the problem or not, but when you talk about sort of the focus on the legislature as such and say the problem is this is not a legislature where there's a sense of public interest but it's just self-interest, then, you know, that's one of the reforms that appeals to people who are sort of fed up with culture. I think the one reason that a lot of political scientists are skeptical of the benefit of term limits is that we have had an ongoing experiment because about a dozen states have imposed them. And it's not clear that they're completely, that those states with term limits and those without are different in kind in terms of corruption or conflicts of interest or general economic performance or happiness with the level of governance. So if I said I think that there are some institutional fixes that will have appeal, some of them might actually help, but they're all hard to pass. I'm back to then, how do you just have a general change in culture? And I think I don't know the answer to that. I think the I've been on some panels like this with former Governor Edgar, and one of his examples of a sort of change of culture that was hard to predict, and it's hard even afterwards to explain, was this change in attitudes towards drunk driving. This was a long time when people just took it for granted. People drink and drive, and it's a shame, and it has some bad effects. And then without a single precipitating incident or something, it's just a concerted campaign of activity by people, again, from the bottom up, mothers against drunk drivers and such. The public attitude, the culture about whether that's acceptable behavior changed, and I think it's not that there isn't any drunk driving anymore, but it's taken much more seriously than it was a few decades ago. And looking back, we can say this is clearly a change for the better. It's hard to say exactly why it happened. So I said I was going to be ER. I don't want to be ER all the way through the night and say there's no chance of improving in the strong form corruption, in the weaker form just sort of a narrow-mindedness of government or just dysfunctional government that even if the individual legislators are well-intentioned, somehow never gets the real problem solved. It can be done, but I don't have a 3-point plan or a 10-point plan on how to get it done.
You mentioned drunk driving and changes in how people view that. I think the marijuana laws today, we just had a law signed by the Republican governor over the summer to allow certain students who rely on marijuana, things like, for epilepsy treatment of things like that, medical marijuana, to be administered at school. That was almost, it passed with hardly any attention given to it whatsoever. 10 years ago, 20 years ago, certainly, that would have been a huge fight. And, so again, times change. People think differently about things. I just wanted to mention on the term limit aspect, a lot of people say, well, we have term limits. We have elections. But Illinois, when you look at the way that the legislative districts are drawn in the state, in many cases, most people run either unopposed or they have very nominal opposition, and really it's not going to change. It's not going to be Republican to Democrat, but maybe in a few districts could it actually flip over like that. So really, is there term limits through elections in the state of Illinois?
Well, we recently had President Obama on campus, and he talked about young voters getting involved in the midterms and other elections, and that only 1 in 5 young voters came out in the last election. So here amongst many young people as well, that's a shot across the bow that you can make an influence and you can make a change. And hopefully it's not just one population that directs others, but we have changes in our demographics happening in the U.S., and there's a tremendous opportunity to use the influence of young people on issues, whether it's gun reform or other things that drive you affordability in higher education. But if you don't vote for the people and challenge them, then the status quo will continue. So the outsized influence of some special interests is partially because about money, and we can counteract that if we as voters take to the polls and do that with our feet. And that doesn't necessarily cost anything, but it does mean that you have to mobilize others. And 1 in 5 is pretty embarrassing.
Brian, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I gave a presentation last night on redistricting, and so I'm the quick version is I'm all in favor of some kind of reform that would change the way the maps are drawn in Illinois. The American states have a lot of different ways they draw their maps. There's lots of variety. This is the Illinois one is unusual because what it comes down to in the end is a lottery over which party gets to gerrymander. We could have bipartisan maps, but that doesn't happen. We draw a name out of a hat and take a balance commission, add one extra partisan member, and then that party draws its preferred map. That's not a great system. And so if I could change one thing, I'd leave campaign finance reform or redistricting or the electoral system, or I'd start with redistricting. One reason there is cynicism about and people decide not to take part in politics is because they sense that there's no competition, and there is around 50% of the seats for the state assembly, the House and Senate, the state legislature aren't contested. That's redistricting isn't the only culprit, but it's a big part of it. So a lot of people put a huge amount of effort into collecting signatures to try to get a redistricting, a fair map amendment on the ballot 3 times, and they've failed at the sort of technical level. The court has struck down the language. We haven't got to the point where the people of Illinois have been able to vote. But if it were up to me, if a genie gave me the power to change something with Illinois, I would change the way the maps are drawn. I think it would be a big change for the better.
And any of the students who are in the room want to ask a question, a chance to win extra credit tonight just for coming out. We'd like to hear from one of you if we could. I have about 15 minutes or so left. I want to get back to the economy real quick here, or at least innovation in the economy. Laura, Urbana, you touched on this a little bit earlier. Urbana is an incubation hub in the state of Illinois, but we've been going around the state talking to a lot of different people, and I would say not all parts of the state are incubation hubs for that. Is what's happening here benefiting the rest of the state of Illinois, or is a lot of what's happening here being exported to other states and other places, and it's not really, the impact's not being felt statewide?
Well, certainly we're proud of what we've done to build our own startup economy and growing companies here, despite what was said politically by one person in this race. There are companies that are growing dozens of jobs, hundreds of jobs in our community, and they're doing so because of the inventions and innovation that come out of this campus, technology, commercialization, smart minds. Of all the companies that we incubated, the incubator was something that was funded by the government, $8 million of capital back in 2003 into the Ryan administration. That incubator has housed about 250 companies. They've raised more than $1 billion of venture capital, and about 60% have stayed in Champaign County. So the majority by far are staying in our local economy, helping downstate jobs. And that means people, you know, live around the region, not just in the economy locally, but also that we're contributing to the state by the next likely place that they go if they don't stay is Chicago. We only have, of all those graduates out of the incubator, presently four companies that are in operation in California. So it would seem that from all the headlines or the political rancor I hear that there was this mass exodus, but that's not the case. And in some cases, it's hard because of the funding. So in venture capital, I'd said there's been a lot of growth in Chicago and in the Midwest and in Champaign with venture capital as well. But we're lacking in the life sciences and some of the difficult capital-intensive areas like energy that require a lot more investment, and those are still in the coasts. So it's hard to find somebody who will back drug development, which is going to be $1 billion to market, or clean tech types of industries, solar industries. A lot of that investment is still in the coasts, and so that's something that I think is an evolving ecosystem that we still need to address. Now, around the state, it is important to recognize that we have made Chicago a destination, a lot of tech hubs already. I'd say there's a proliferation that serves that community really well. I'd question whether we need more. We've already got 1871 and Matter and EbHub and lots of places where you can build up companies. It's somewhere around 80 official innovation hubs, but hundreds of co-working spaces now. So entrepreneurs are very well resourced. That is not ubiquitous across the state. So in other places, like in Bloomington Normal, ISU doesn't have an incubator for its students. They're working towards that goal, perhaps to develop with Illinois Wesleyan, but it doesn't exist yet. In other places, like DeKalb, doesn't exist yet at NIU. I think their leadership would also say that that's an aim. So amongst our university peers, we're perhaps well-resourced to support, and it's taken more than a decade to develop. But in other places, they haven't been given the opportunities that we have and aren't necessarily seeing their students as a really important opportunity to build an economy around their local community. And if they have the same results that we have and most other incubators have, the output of that is those jobs, majority will stay in your community. And so I think there's a real chance to invest in entrepreneurship.
Well, of course, there's been attention given to what some people call Discovery Partners Institute in Chicago, and working with other campuses across the state, you know, different innovation networks, creating an innovation network across the state. That seems like something that could fill that void.
I think there'll be more investment in different nodes or hubs across the state and more coordination across those as well. So how do we partner and rise tides together, share resources? In this part of the state, for example, you've got now three medical schools with the Carl Illinois College of Medicine with its first class this year, affiliated as the name would suggest with Carl Hospital System. And in Peoria, you have OSF and the University of Illinois College of Medicine Peoria. In Springfield, you have the SIU Medical School in Springfield, and you have St. John's Healthcare System as well. So how do we use these large healthcare systems and 3 innovative but separately governed medical schools to create more healthcare entrepreneurship and innovation. And we're all relatively close to each other. I think that triangle has a lot of opportunity to support more companies, more physician inventors, and we're just getting started.
Right about 10 minutes or so to go. So if you still have a question, if you haven't filled a card out, just raise your hand if you want one. If you have filled one out, nobody's picked it up, raise that up in the air. We'll try to grab that as well. I'm going to go back to Brian. We did have a question earlier online, and this was, when and how did the state budget crisis begin? Is it really a crisis?
Yeah, I wrote a piece in 2014 saying that maybe the word crisis is being used too often, that one reason people have become cynical or they're extremely skeptical about solutions to economic problems is because we've heard such a parade of crises. At the federal level, we had the debt ceiling, and we've had 10 years now of discussion of the budget crisis. For a while, the crisis was that we didn't have a budget, or it was the pension crisis. I'm not strictly talking about marketing and the description, but I think the idea that everything is described as a crisis, but it seems like life just goes on, has made people think that maybe there is no crisis after all. If we were Greece or Argentina or Iceland or one of the places that's had a severe crisis where the currency plummets and loses 50% of its value and the entire country is forced to impose capital controls, you suddenly can't get money out of the bank, it would be more obvious. So to some extent, a fiscal crisis in an American state isn't ever going to look as bad as a fiscal crisis in a country where there isn't an insulation of being part of 50 large economies. We're not Detroit yet, but I think the language of crisis is not inappropriate, just in the sense that we have had. I realize I haven't answered your question of where it began yet. We've had basically a problem that our revenues are lower than our spending and have been, and the gap is widening, and it's a vicious cycle because the spending increasingly includes financing debt. So people have this surreal experience of if you're on a state dental plan, you go to the dentist and you get reimbursed 2 years later with a big interest check. Like, what on earth is this second check? And it's interest. The state is mandated to pay a high rate of interest because it took so long to pay. I guess I'm actually making money on these dental procedures given how little interest they get from the bank. Maybe I should be getting more work done. But you know, where did it begin? I think it began. It's fashionable to say it's the pension. That the problem was that a pension holiday. We stopped contributing enough to fund pensions, and that's true. But in some respect, it's like someone who doesn't have enough money to pay their bills choosing, will I pay for my rent or will I pay for my utilities bill? I guess I'll stop paying utilities, and it's a utilities crisis. But the real crisis is just that there wasn't enough money to cover the things you're spending for. So you know, when did it begin? You could say. Late 90s is sort of the if you just look at figures that show revenue and spending, that's where the lines start to diverge and they just haven't come back together. And as I said earlier, I think there's blame to go around. So I don't think that it's all because of, pick your villain, George Ryan, Rod Blagojevich, Michael Madigan, the Illinois House. It's really been through a series of different administrations, a series of different governments. We just haven't tackled the problems.
When it comes to trying to attract business here, and Laura, I don't know if you could weigh in on this, but is the state's budget problems, does that come up? You know, when a company might be looking to locate here, do they say, hey, the state doesn't have its act together?
I think the ability to forecast what you're going to pay in taxes has been a concern, that there's been volatility and that there was a budget crisis for some time where there was an uncertainty if taxes would raise and they had been lowered and there was structural implication that they would be higher. So prediction by companies is important. Uncertainty is not favorable. Right. And that's where I think I hear a lot of angst over that. Things like the R&D tax credit, as I'd mentioned, that would only get approved for a year or two or something like that. So you don't have the predictability to be able to make longer-term investments and know how that cost might be offset by some of the incentives that are available.
And Brian, that is something state government, I always feel, does not do very well, and that is lay out a plan for the future. Usually it's maybe laying out a plan to get to the next election, but beyond that, long-term planning does not seem to go hand in hand with the way government operates, at least in Illinois.
Yeah, I think you could probably make that claim about most governments in the country, or maybe most governments in the world, that in some respects the horizon for government is always a short-term one dictated by an electoral cycle. And that, I mean, maybe that goes to our prior question, when can we get politicians who are thinking seriously about not just about themselves and how they're going to get reelected and who they have to, which voters they have to please to get reelected, but the long-term health of the polity they're representing, and thinking seriously about whether they should be borrowing money from their grandchildren and grandchildren's grandchildren to pay for today's projects. And I would agree that it's a tricky thing to do to get around short-term electoral incentives. Again, if I had the, as we near the end of the hour, if I had the solution, then I'd probably be running with it. But I think it's true. There's been too much of a short-term perspective for too long.
We do have a question from Facebook. We have about 4 minutes or so here, so I'm going to throw this one to Laura. It says, most students rely on internships to build their resume while in college. Often those are unpaid, as people in this crowd probably know. Would requiring internships to be paid encourage students to stay with Illinois companies? Should there be a law for that?
Well, here in the Research Park, we have 800 students employed through their time at Illinois, so they're still active, full-time enrolled students, and those internships are almost all paid. And we're very proud that the average wage amongst the student interns here is $18 an hour, which is nearly double minimum wage. So being paid well, and why do employers want to do that? Because we know that amongst, as an example, engineering students, more than half of those students will choose employment upon a prior internship. So if you think of it as a recruiting game, and if you were trying to recruit in athletes, if you came in senior year and you had never contacted that student before and they were a high scorer on the team and you knew that every other university was trying to recruit them, you would realize that's silly, you're too late. In it for the student, what is that career opportunity? And so there's a win for the companies that take that early risk on that student. We're seeing that get younger and younger. So employers that are giving internships to freshmen, as soon as they have a GPA, that there's a potential. Internships for high school students, and employers that are in the Chicago area that are doing a really good job of that, but also Caterpillar, Abbott, AbbVie, and some other employers that have looked to high school students as a future for them. So I think for employers, they really can see these as both a win for their future hiring needs. For the students, they're getting an experiential learning opportunity that should shape their education differently, that they can take what they're learning in school, apply it to the company, and hopefully that makes the company more attractive when they see how that will be used in their future employment. And for the companies, they're able to get a younger viewpoint that hopefully disrupts and creates better inventions for their products, because many of those need a more youthful perspective, and somebody in the company that's been there 30 years didn't think of the same thing that a younger mind might have.
But it seems like that would be a good thing if a company can afford it or wants to, but it also seems like it might shut the door on some students, because just like when costs go up, usually there's going to be fewer and fewer who get that opportunity. So that could be the negative side.
Yeah, the requirement, I'd say, is somewhat inherent in the minimum wage laws. My advice to employers is always, why would you do an unpaid employment opportunity when you're essentially putting yourself at risk on a violation of minimum wage? The only way to get around that is course credit. But even that, it's not the best employment model that sets up that you're really working for a company that you can see yourself in the future of what that translates to for future employment relationship that you have with the company. So I think you don't pay the students, then you're not going to get the same quality and output that you might expect. And for increasingly the employers, I think they're recruiting across a number of different disciplines. Interdisciplinary perspective is really essential for innovation in the future. So it can't just be one. You have a greater opportunity when you're paying less with students to try out new types of skills that cooperatively working together can advance a company. There are things the state can do to encourage that as well, though. So we have an Illinois Cooperative Work Study Program that is not well funded, but it sits within IBHE, and it allows for employers to make a competitive proposal to have the state pay for half of the expense of internships. Some employers are using that. It actually started on this campus, for example, with the architecture school that made it so that architects could get paid internships from the University of Illinois. It's expanded to many other areas. But as I said, that program is not very well funded at the state. I think it's a really good carrot to employers to do something that we want them to do and for students to get a meaningful experience.
Okay, well, we're going to have to leave it there tonight. We're about out of time, and I do want to again thank our panel tonight. We had Laura Frericks, director of the University of Illinois Research Park, and Brian Gaines, who is a professor with the University of Illinois. Give them both a hand. And we want to thank everyone for coming out tonight. For those listening on air, this has been another of our NPR Illinois Forums for Election 2018, Seeking Solutions. We're still traveling around the states this year addressing different topics, and all of the forums can be found on the website at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford with NPR Illinois, and for Illinois Public Media, support for the series is provided by AARP. Have a good night.
This is WGLT Normal, a service of Illinois State University's School of Communication. When you hear it on air, know that you can find more online at WGLT.org. Find the articles, photos, and even bonus content available only at our website. Hear interviews with elected and community leaders and those making news by making a difference. Keep up on Bloomington Normal News and Bloomington Normal's public media at WGLT.org.